Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the dentist you look forward to seeing. The Gentle Dentist, the only dentist you're happy to come back to. The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. How can we make you smile? Call 614-431-3311.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Likewise, you didn't present any Newton's second law analysis regarding the front of Mr. O'Keefe's head with respect to whether his head was contacted by that spoiler, did you?
Correct. Again, it was a glancing hit. We wouldn't be able to do that.
Oh, so it's a glancing hit to the front of the head is your hypothesis?
This whole pedestrian impact is a glancing hit.
So you can have your arm to the side like this, with the back of the vehicle coming like this, and you could glance the right eye with the arm out, is that what you're saying?
That's what my picture shows when I'm standing next to the car. I could probably find the slide for you.
So you didn't do a force analysis to determine how much force would be applied assuming the contact with the right eye, did you?
That's correct.
And force analysis is what biomechanists do, correct? That's what a biomechanist does?
That is part of what we
do. Part of what they do.
So I lined up his anthropometry relative to the known height of the vehicle.
You attempted to line it up. That's one method. But another method is to apply Newton's second law, like you did to the back of the head when he fell, correct?
Correct, if we had more information.
Mr. Lessie, why don't we break here?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. So, jurors, your watchers are here. We'll see you in 15
minutes. Please rise for the jury.
Goodbye.
Session.
Go ahead, Mr. Lassie, whenever you're ready.
Just take a moment, Your Honor, to reorient. I'll be right back.
Good afternoon, Dr. Welcher.
Good afternoon. Nice to see you again.
Same. We had left off talking about some examples of Newton's second law and the application of it and the parlance of force equals mass times acceleration. And I now want to continue on with that discussion. It is correct that you can conduct a force analysis on any part of the body, correct?
It's more difficult on internal with live people. Like if you wanted like my appendix, I really necessarily couldn't.
Let's talk about the musculoskeletal system, the outside bones. You can conduct a force analysis
on any bone. On the inside.
Sir, if I could finish my question, please.
Okay.
You can conduct a force analysis on any bone in the body, correct?
More or less, yes.
So the force analysis I use as a synonym with Newton's second law is not exclusive to the head, correct? You can do it on other bones in the body, correct?
Correct.
On direct examination, your direct examination here, you did not present a force calculation representing what you allege to be contact between the vehicle and Mr. O'Keefe's right arm, did you?
Correct.
And nowhere in your report do you present a force calculation for Mr. O'Keefe's right arm, do you?
Correct. We didn't have enough information to do it.
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
Now, given that you stated that, quote, determining the effects of physical forces on the human anatomy, end quote, is the job of a biomechanical engineer, you must have conducted several force calculations related to accidents involving humans in your career, correct?
Hundreds.
Hundreds. Now, you didn't present a force calculation in your materials, as you've stated on direct, with regard to the arm, and I'll include in the right arm going from the shoulder all the way to the tip of the hand, okay? So that's my definition of a right arm. You didn't present any force calculation on that part of the body of Mr. O'Keefe, did you?
Correct.
Assume Mr. and we're going to apply Newton's second law. Assume Mr. O'Keefe's hand weighed 7 pounds. So that's the M in the F equals MA.
That's not a good assumption.
Well, what number would you like to apply for an M for the hand of Mr. O'Keefe? I'll take any number you got.
Just the hand?
Just the hand.
The whole arm of Mr. O'Keefe weighs approximately 12 pounds.
Okay, fair enough. So the whole arm is either from the shoulder down to the tip of the fingers is about 12 pounds, right?
Correct.
Okay. So assume that the Lexus SUV was traveling at 20 miles an hour. All right? Under your theory going backwards, 20 miles an hour. And the third variable I'd like to give you is to assume an impact window of 10 milliseconds.
Okay.
Can you calculate the G's of force from that data?
Not, you need more information.
Well, let me ask you this. What more information would you need?
So we talked about the glancing impact?
I'm talking about a force calculation of an impact, not as to whether it's glancing or not.
So you want a direct head-on impact in the arm, not a glancing hit to where the Lexus comes in, hits the arm, and they continue off together?
I'd like to start with that, but just so we can hopefully expedite it for the jury,
okay.
I'm going to want to get to what you have depicted in your diagram of holding the arm out. And that's not a glancing impact. Is that, sir, with the right arm in parallel with the back of the Lexus?
Yes, it is. So really what, I'm sorry, let me finish, please. What you're concerned about is where the center of mass is. With the center of mass out towards the corner of the car, that becomes a glancing contact. So you don't have a center of mass contact, you have a glancing contact.
Okay, fair enough. Well, so let's start the first force calculation.
I need my calculator.
I'm going to let him use his calculator.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Tell me what you're ready to say.
Go ahead.
So let's take a scenario where it's a center of impact.
Center of mass.
Center of mass impact, right?
Okay.
Impact to the right arm.
Okay.
Let's start with that one.
Okay. And you want me to use like a 10 millisecond?
Yeah, be conservative. Yeah, let's use a 10 millisecond for the impact window.
Question?
What do you get for F of force in the F equals M times A calculation?
About 2,188 pounds. I made a triangular crash pulse assumption.
Right, and if you took the milliseconds in half, become less conservative, would you end up doubling the 2,188 number?
If you cut it in half, you would double, yes.
Exactly, through a simple mathematical semi-algebraic application of the numbers, correct? You
correct.
Divide.
We're doing a little simplification in terms of the crash pulse shape, but generally, yes.
Right. So, but let's take the conservative number, the lower number, 2188, that you came up with. Do you know from the literature, as you did with the head, you went to the literature and said, this is how much pounds of force the F you would get to have to cause a break at the occipital bone. Do you know from the literature how much force it would take to break an arm bone?
I have an idea, yes.
What is your idea?
So for a distributed load such as this, not a concentrated load, you're going to need somewhere between, I've seen, and this is for cadaver tests, a low of like 2,500, maybe a little lower, to a high of 7,000.
Sir, you have switched, haven't you? We're talking about center mass impact. Did you in your calculation just switch to a side swipe impact to do your calculation?
No.
I'm asking about a center of mass impact. How much force would you need? Let's start with the hand. Maybe it's a simpler one. Do you know how much force it takes to break, excuse me, any of the hand bones, you know what I'm referring to, the phalangeals?
Yes.
The metacarpals and the carpals?
Correct.
How much pounds of force do you need to break any one of those bones?
Actually, I didn't find any distributed loading on the amount of force. I don't know.
Well, no, I understand. But I'm asking, do you know from the literature, not a calculator? Doesn't the literature tell you? Can't you go to the literature like you did with the head? And you say, okay, to break the occipital bone, the literature says you need a minimum amount of force of this. I'm asking you the same question for the hand. If you don't know, it's okay. But do you know what the literature says for how much force is needed to break a bone in the hand?
So for a distributed load across the hand, there are distributed load tests that show you need over 300 G's on the arm to do that. So it would depend on the mass of the hand.
What is the range of force that you would need to break a bone in the hand? Do you know from the literature? If you don't, that's okay.
I could probably figure it out.
How long would it take you to figure it out? Do you know from the literature what that number is?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Is 300 to 400 pounds of force sound right from the literature that it would take to break a bone in the hand?
For a distributed load,
yes.
Such as the taillight? No.
No, not a distributed load. A load from a motor vehicle going backwards.
Right, that's a distributed load.
Right. So you're saying 300 to 400 pounds of force would not be enough to break any bone in the hand. Is that your answer?
So for a flat distributed load, like hitting the taillight, you're gonna need higher.
How about another part of the back of the vehicle?
I guess if you hit on the very corner and it wasn't a distributed impact, like if you had a more concentrated impact,
yes,
that could increase or decrease the amount of force required.
How much would it decrease it from the number you gave?
Depends on what you're hitting, what it's made out of.
The Lexus
area.
SUV. Let's assume. I'm sorry.
Mr. Les, can you repeat the question, please?
Absolutely. Thank you. Let's assume we're talking about this Lexus SUV,
mm-hmm.
right? Let me back up. You don't know where exactly, under your theory, that there was a contact. You don't know, you testify to on direct, you don't know exactly where that point of contact is, do you?
Correct.
You don't know.
Except it's on the taillight.
Well, you're saying it's on the taillight, but you didn't observe any impact yourself personally, right?
Did I see Ms. Reed's Lexus?
You didn't see the impact, correct?
That is correct.
So, and there is no firsthand witness that saw, under your view, that a collision occurred. There's no witness to say where the arm was, correct?
There's no person that saw it.
Right. And you have chosen a point of contact, okay? You chose that for your analysis, correct?
Correct.
And you pick that location, but it's also possible that under your theory that a collision occurred, that that arm could have been impacted any part of the back of the vehicle. That's possible, isn't it?
That's not probable, no.
I'm asking, is it possible?
Anything is possible. I don't deal in possibilities. I deal in probabilities. Right. It's not probable.
So, but you don't know exactly where the point of impact was.
So within the range of the light and the exact angle of the hand? No, I don't. What I do know is at the rear taillight area.
So your assumption
is that it had, that because there's a tail light that is altered, it must have been by Mr. O'Keefe's arm. That's your conclusion, correct?
My conclusion is there are taillight fragments, a broken glass, lacerations to his arm, and his DNA on the back of the vehicle in the area of the taillight.
Sir, and Your Honor, I'm going to move to strike the DNA part of that answer for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I'm not going to strike it.
Okay, so you're making assumptions. You're taking what you view to be certain data, and you're coming to a conclusion, but that is based upon circumstantial information, correct? Is that fair?
Are you calling, like, pieces of the taillight at the scene around his body circumstantial information?
Sir, let me go to the force and go back to the force analysis. Let's go back to the numbers. I want to stay on, if we can, just the calculation. So let's go back to the minimum amount of force you understand from the literature that it takes to break any bone in the arm from the finger up. Let's start with a hand. What's the minimum amount of force that can be applied to break a bone in the hand?
So it depends on the loading. So I don't actually know. In terms of the forearm, I can tell you there's data that shows up to 300 Gs of loading, you will not get fractures. There's one up to 750 Gs showing no fractures for a male of similar height and weight of Mr. O'Keefe.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So let's take those numbers,
okay?
You said 300 and 750. Did I hear it correctly?
You did.
Okay, that's the numbers you gave that would break a bone, correct?
So the 300 actually didn't break any bones, I believe. The 750, the one example, didn't break a bone, but as you got above 350, you started to break bones.
So you got above 350?
300.
Above 300, yeah, because that's what I thought you said the first time. You got above 300, you start to get breaking bones, correct?
Correct.
And so if you take that 300 number and compare it to the 2,188 pounds of force, you have seven times the amount of force necessary to break the bone, correct, in the force analysis?
No. If you take 300 Gs times a 12-pound arm, you get 3,600 pounds. The calculation you asked me to run earlier gave you 2,188 pounds.
Right.
So you are 1,412 pounds above the force required. Like the tolerance is 1,412 pounds above the force you would say get in a 20 mile an hour impact in terms of the fracture forces.
Let's do it this way.
I'm sorry?
Let's do it this way.
Okay.
The force that you calculated from my hypothetical of this Lexus SUV going backwards, you came up with the F number of 2,188, correct?
I'm sorry, you said
2,188.
No, you said dyslexic? Do you say Lexus? I didn't understand what you said.
The Lexus SUV that you've been talking about.
Gotcha.
Okay?
I didn't hear it.
You came up with a number for F for force of 2,188. Are you changing that number?
Nope.
Okay, so let's go with your number of force from this vehicle of 2,188. I'm just simply asking, how much force does it take to break a bone in the right arm of a human being? How much force, not acceleration, how much force does it take to break a bone in the right arm?
Sure. So somewhere between 2,500, the one cadaver tested the distributed load of someone of similar size and weight and actually close in age to Mr. O'Keefe showed 7,000 pounds of force to break it.
Let's go to the hand. Do you or disagree that the literature shows
It only takes 300 to 400 pounds of force to break a bone in the hand. Do you disagree with that?
Your question's too general. I can't answer your question. It depends on the loading. If I take my pencil, which has a very fine point, and jam it through my hand, I can jam it right through my hand because it's a very small point. But if I distribute the load and a broader load, such as hitting a taillight, it takes much more force because the load's distributed across it. It's like if I sit on the corner of my bed. I might sink in this far when I sit on the corner of my bed, but what happens when I spread my load out, when I lay on my bed like this? I don't sink in as far. Has my weight changed? And weight is basically force. No, but I've distributed it over a larger area, so for a given force, you get less sinking into the mattress. So if you hit a broad surface like a taillight or a wall like this, it takes much more force than if I were to take a singular small round object and jam it into the hand. That hurts. This does not.
Okay, if you can hear my question, if it's unclear, you tell me. For not a pen, not your bed, but for a Lexus SUV of 6,000 pounds, is there any part of the back of the Lexus in any manner where you can get a break to the hand from 300 to 400 pounds of force?
Any part on the back of the Lexus?
Yes.
Probably.
Okay, so probably, your words, you can get a break to the hand from just between 300 to 400 pounds of force. That's what you just said, correct?
So you're taking the totality of the back of it, like if you got it stuck in the bumper, potentially, yeah. But from a taillight or a broad flat surface, no.
I'm not asking about a taillight. Any part of the back of an SUV, you agree that it is probable that you can get a break of the hand bones from just 300 to 400 pounds of force?
Your question is incomplete, right? You said any part of the back, but then you wanted me to not include taillights or not include the rear body panel. If you hit a very narrow part of the car, like say the edge of the tailpipe, that creates much more of a narrow contact. So force divided by area is pressure. So if you have a very tiny area, you have very high contact pressures. And so, but if you distribute the load over a larger area, the number on the bottom of that fraction is much bigger. So your contact pressure drops. So hitting the edge of the exhaust pipe is gonna have a much higher likelihood of causing a fracture than hitting flat against the taillight.
Okay, what we're gonna do to make this more efficient, excuse me, sorry. Mr. Wolt, can you pull up a slide from Mr. Wolt's, or Dr. Welcher's presentation for the back of the Lexus, please? The back hatch, and Your Honor, may we publish that?
Sure, do you know what number though, Mr. Lexus?
Mr. Wolt does, and I know you need
us.
It, so he'll tell me before I publish, and then we'll give you the number.
Your Honor, may I look here?
Yes, I'm going to let Dr. Welcher look at his slide.
Oh, sure.
Here, yeah. Instead of just up there.
The back hatch, yes. Do you have one of just the rear gate? The one measuring the height, maybe? There we go. Thank you. Okay, this is your slide presentation.
Is there any part of the back of the Lexus SUV that has that more concentrated area where if the hand hit it, 300 to 400 pounds of force could break it? Is there any part, for example, the edge of the license plates, above the license plates, the L symbol that sticks out that would be concentrated? Anything you see there, could 300 to 400 pounds of force contacting at any of those points cause a fracture of any of the bones of the hand?
So, I don't know how to show this because in the middle photograph, Right where the 2 is on the license plate?
Yes.
There's a vertical edge. That area is recessed in. So if you hit right on that vertical edge, that could potentially do it.
That could do it. How about the L of the for the Lexus symbol if the hand is there?
No. It's not deep enough. The compliance of the hand is just going to sink into the car.
Is there any other part other than the license plate that the force applied, you would only need 300 to 400 pounds of force to break the hand?
Maybe the exhaust pipe, and potentially if you hand your hand up near the spoiler.
Right, so now let's go from 300 to 400. Let's go to the 2188, which is your number. Use 2188. Is there any place where in 2188 force you could have a fracture of the hand on that back gate?
Just to be clear, 2188 is a number I calculated for you. It's not, quote, my number.
I understand, but we did the calculation. Is there anywhere on the back of the vehicle where 2188 could cause a fracture of the hand?
So that was a forearm fracture tolerance I thought we were talking about, because we used the weight of the whole arm for that.
We did. And my question is there anywhere in the back of the vehicle, in your opinion, that could cause a fracture with that?
I'm sorry, to the hand? Just a hand or the whole arm?
I'll take any part of the right arm. You call it the hand, the forearm. Is there any part that could cause a fracture?
So probably similarly, if you got your forearm down near that transition, I don't know if you can see the little dot. I'm talking about this area.
Yes, yes.
Right here.
Yep.
So that transition between the two body panels.
Yes.
That could potentially do it. That's back where the reverse lights are. I'd have to look at whether, you know, that would take it before breaking the plastic. And then, again, maybe if you hit the exhaust pipe as well, it's a much more narrow loading condition.
How about the corner of the tail lamp?
The corner of the tail lamp? I suppose if you had just your hand on the very, very corner, potentially?
Potentially. But you didn't do any of that force analysis for this case, did you?
For the hand, no.
But you did it for the head, correct?
Correct, because that I'm able to quantify.
Mr. Lessie, that was slide 108. I just want to
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, Mr. Wolk. Yes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. You are aware, Dr. Welcher, that Mr. O'Keefe suffered no fractures of any kind in his hand, correct?
So there were no fractures noted in the autopsy report, but they didn't actually x-ray, from the records I've seen, either his hand or his arm. So there was, at least according to the autopsy report, no overt fractures, but the x-rays I saw, none of them were of the arm, and the autopsy report said no sternum, spine, I think it said torso. They didn't say that there were no fractures there.
Was there any evidence in the medical records that you reviewed of any indication whatsoever of a fracture in Mr. O'Keefe's hand?
No.
Was there any indication whatsoever in any of the medical records you reviewed that there was a fracture of any bone in the right arm of Mr. O'Keefe?
Not that I saw. Again, it wasn't x-rayed.
Was there any indication in the medical records and the autopsy that you say you reviewed of any fracture of any bone anywhere in the body of Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes.
Other than the occipital bone or the skull?
There's a couple bones in the skull that were fractured, but other than the skull, no.
Correct. So, are you aware that the medical examiner
for the state of Massachusetts, Dr. Shorty Bello performed an autopsy on Mr. O'Keefe. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
And you're aware of it because you read the autopsy report, correct?
Correct.
Are you implying, and it's a question, that Dr. Shorty Bello missed a fracture or didn't look properly for a fracture on Mr. O'Keefe?
No. I'm simply indicating that, for example, a hairline fracture, I didn't see any evidence that they actually x-rayed the structure, so there would be no overt evidence of that.
There were wounds on the right arm of Mr. O'Keefe, correct?
Correct.
And you are saying that the medical examiner should have x-rayed that to determine whether there was a hairline fracture? Is that your testimony?
No, you're asking me about evidence and proof of absence of fracture. So I would look for an x-ray to see if that was the case. I haven't seen any evidence of an x-ray of the arms.
So it's your position that on every autopsy, there should be an x-ray of every bone in the body, and that the clinical judgment of the medical examiner should not be accepted, and there should be an x-ray of every bone before a conclusion can be drawn that there's no fracture to a bone in the body of a deceased. Is that your testimony?
Absolutely not. Like, I'm an engineer. You're asking me about proof. And so proof is somebody looked at it, somebody took an x-ray, somebody palpated and found a comminuted fracture. So we're talking about proof.
Sir, I didn't use proof in my question.
You asked me about the opinion of a medical examiner. I'm not a medical examiner.
Only one person at a time. Mr. Lessie, let him finish and then you can ask the question.
Your Honor, I hadn't finished my question.
Okay, then finish your question, Dr. Welcher. Wait for the question. Then let Dr. Welcher respond. It's a nightmare for Madam.
I understand. I think I've been doing that, but I'll redouble my efforts. Dr. Welcher, I didn't use proof in my question. I'm going to repeat the question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any indication in any medical record, autopsy report of the deceased of any fracture of any bone in the body?
That was not your original question, but to answer your question, no. Except for the skull.
Except for the skull.
Correct.
Do you understand whether the absence of any fractures other than the skull of Mr. O'Keefe was of significance to the medical examiner, Dr. Shorty Bello, in the conclusion she reached in the autopsy report that you read?
Objection.
System.
Did you read the conclusions of Dr. Shorty Bello in the autopsy?
I believe so.
Are you aware of whether Dr. Shorty Bello has analyzed whether the injuries to Mr. O'Keefe are inconsistent or consistent with a motor vehicle impact? Are you aware of any analysis to that effect?
Objection.
So I'm going to see you on this one.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Welcher, I would like to talk now about your paint exercise. You did not present, as you have stated, a force calculation with regard to the arm. You did a paint exercise. And what I want to do is to reference, and if we need to bring it up, sir, to refresh you, slides 103 to 120 of your PowerPoint presentation in this trial. I'll just call it the blue paint exercise. Is that descriptive enough for you to know what I'm talking about?
No, it's not an exercise, it's a test.
Okay, you want to call it a blue paint test?
Sure.
Okay, let's call it a blue paint test. I just want to try to expedite things and use parlance that we can agree on.
Okay.
So your blue paint test involved painting the right rear taillight blue, correct?
Correct.
Positioning the test subject behind the taillight, correct?
Correct.
With the arm held out, correct?
Correct.
And at a right angle, correct?
Correct.
And then the vehicle, the Lexus SUV, is backed into the test subject, correct?
So I ran three different tests.
I know. Well, let's just do each one at a time, okay?
Okay, so you're starting with the last one.
I'll start with whatever one you want.
Okay.
How about if we start with the one at 1 mile per hour?
None of them are at 1 mile an hour.
2 miles per hour?
2 miles an hour.
Let's do 2 miles per hour. Let's start with that one,
okay?
Now, did you conduct that test in an attempt to show that the injury patterns on Mr. O'Keefe's right arm are consistent with being struck by the Lexus taillight on that arm?
So generally, I wanted to show that the location, area, and span over which that headlight covers matches the location and area of the lacerations on his arm.
That's what I want to get to. So you discussed data that you say shows that shows the Lexus SUV was traveling above 20 miles per hour during the period that you allege the SUV made contact with Mr. O'Keefe. Is that correct?
No. Where'd you get that from?
Hold on. Okay. The answer is no. So did you do a test involving 20 miles per hour?
I did some other backing tests.
Yes.
I was looking at how the rear pedestrian system and what warnings you got from the rear pre-collision system, the PCS system.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree that you did a blue paint test with the vehicle going at 2 miles per hour? Did you?
Of course.
Do that? Okay. You didn't do a blue paint test with the vehicle going at 20 miles per hour, correct?
That is correct. Okay. I was not going to hit myself with a Lexus at 20 miles an hour.
You could have done other tests where the vehicle was going at 20 miles per hour if you used a crash test dummy, correct? You could have done that.
If you used the right crash test dummy,
right,
and then to set up the test, because generally you only get one or two shots at it because you damage the car, you have to know everything about the parameters. And so again, pedestrian impacts are so very sensitive to initial angles. If I were to do a test and it was off a tiny, tiny bit and we got some different results, I would be in here having to defend it. Well, your own testing didn't show it. Point is we don't have enough information to be able to conduct that testing.
Exactly. So, your assumption, as I understand it, is that the Lexus was going 24 miles per hour in reverse and made contact with Mr. O'Keefe. That's your analysis, sir?
No. There is not one single slide I have that says this is the speed he was hit at 24 miles an hour.
Do you know, do you have a hypothesis at what speed you believe there was impact? Do you have a point of impact speed?
I do not know the exact speed. We don't know the initial point of contact. We don't know where exactly he was on the road. We don't have enough information to determine that.
Exactly. Let's talk about the other information we don't have.
Okay.
You don't have the information as to the, from your alleged point of contact to where Mr. O'Keefe landed? You don't have that information, do you, sir?
I'm sorry, where is my alleged point of contact?
You allege that there was a point of contact between the Lexus, the back of the Lexus, and
correct,
Mr. O'Keefe, right?
Right, but I don't know where that is on the road.
Right. You don't know that. I want to go through the information that you don't have.
Okay, nope.
So you don't have that. You don't have the point of impact. You don't have where in the road
there was impact under your allegation.
Those are the same thing.
Right. You don't have where the, under your view, the body of Mr. O'Keefe landed precisely. You don't have that information, do you?
What do you mean by precisely? We know it's 7 feet off the road. We know it's near the flagpole. We don't know where it started. The problem isn't where it landed. The problem is where it started.
Right, and you don't have that information.
I don't have where it started.
The paint tests that you used, aren't those used, if they're used at all, as an element of physical impact reconstruction, an element, not as the focal point of the test itself?
So that was the focal point of that test. The focal point of the purpose of that test was to show the contact width and location of how someone of Mr. O'Keefe's height, which happens to be me, contacts and where it would contact where the broken taillight was. So no, that was the focal point of the testing. That's why I did the testing. That's why we're calling it paint transfer testing.
Right, but my question, sir, I understand you use paint tests as the focal point, but aren't paint tests in accurate accident reconstruction not used as focal points? They're used as supplements to other tests to get more accurate information. Do you agree or disagree with that?
You didn't give me enough information. I can't agree nor disagree. It depends on what you're trying to do.
Let's go to, on direct examination, you testified that after the 1162-2 trigger event, Ms. Reed's vehicle traveled a distance of 87 feet. Do you recall that?
You are mixing up two things. Remember, the trigger is in the middle of the event.
Give me the chart, please. Your Honor, I'll give you the, as soon as Mr. Wolk gives it, the slide 23, I believe it is.
I'm sorry, what slide?
Well, I want Mr. Wolk to go through it to check. Let me ask it this way, see if we can get to it quicker. Do you remember talking on direct about a calculation of 87 feet where you added, I think it was like a 30 something number and a 50 number, and you came to 87. Do you remember that in your slide presentation, sir?
Slide 37, yes.
Right. So if we could bring up that slide, please, Your Honor, with your permission.
Okay.
That's 36, but okay.
Are you on 33, sir?
No, I'm on 36.
Mr. Wolk, do you have 33? If you could go to 33, sir.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, because that's where your 87 number is, not on the other.
It's on a bunch of slides.
Yep.
Go ahead.
All righty. So if you could zoom in, Mr. Wolk, so Dr. Welcher can see the numbers in the column.
You're going the wrong way.
Yep. They're to the farther to the right.
Oh, I'm not the only one that has problems. No.
Okay.
You still
Sir,
don't
do you
have
remember
it.
Testifying about this? To the farther to the right?
Farther to the right.
Yep.
Keep going. Keep going.
Is that
more.
53 number down there? That column?
Right.
So
can we scroll up a tad so you can see the headers? There you go.
Okay.
No, okay, go ahead.
So am I in the right column relative to start? Is that the column?
So there's two columns. Like Z is relative to where it started. And then positive is forward. And then as you back up, once you go past zero, it becomes negative.
Right. So what I want to do is have you direct us to the column where you calculated 87 feet.
It's in two spots. It's at the end of column Y.
Right. We go all the way down. Is that in the yellow there? Is that 87, sir?
It is.
Okay, is that the 87 number you were referring to?
Hold on a second. You asked me to identify. So then it's, see where the one next to her says minus 53?
Yes.
0.429. If you go up, so it's not a little bit down, a little bit, and add, see where it's changing directions at 34.157?
Yes.
You add those two together, that gives you the same result. So it went 34 feet forward and then 50-something feet backwards.
Right. And what is the 87 feet traveled, is that what you're indicating is the distance traveled during the trigger? Is that what the 87 represents to you?
That is the, so 87 represents the total rearward distance traveled during the trigger.
Okay. So you believe 87 represents the total rearward distance. Did I hear you correctly?
Correct.
Now, can you
hold on, to be clear. So it starts, it pulls forward, then it backs up, passes where it initially started, and goes 53 feet further back.
That's what I want to get to. How many feet did you say on direct, and did you just say now, that it went 87 feet in reverse?
Correct.
Okay.
From its furthest point forward.
Well, that's what I want to get to, because I want to have this point clear. How many feet do you believe the Lexus went in reverse based upon your PowerPoint presentation? Not when it went forward and then came backwards. How many feet do you believe that vehicle went in reverse?
Your question doesn't make any sense, because when it went forward, then it went in reverse.
How many feet do you believe the Lexus went during the trigger?
So it went a total of 80, it went 34 feet forward, then it came back 80, or another 53 feet past where it went.
Exactly. So you've testified that the 11622 trigger event represents a backwards maneuver, correct?
So again, if I was clear, it initially pulls forward and then backs up.
I would like you to define, so it's clear to the jury, do you consider the event of 11622 just backward movement, or do you consider the trigger to be forward movement and adding to it backward movement? Which one?
So can we pull the slide up?
Sure.
Could you zoom in? There you go. No, go back to the left. So that T in the third column for data ID represents the trigger. If you scroll over a little bit to the right, where the highlighted yellow blocks are, you can see one is a forward drive gear, zero is neutral, two is reverse. So that's where it's switched from forward to reverse. I mentioned the brake. So you have it on the brakes coming in, slowing, stopping, going into reverse, and then backing up.
So you conclude that the vehicle for this trigger went 34 feet forward, is that correct?
Correct.
How do you know the vehicle didn't go 150 feet forward? How do you know it just went 4 feet forward? How do you know that?
So the only data we have is this 10-second window. And so we have the velocity when it's going forward. We know how much time it took to do that. So that tells us how far it would travel. Velocity times time is distance.
So are you saying that it is a certainty that it went forward 34 feet and there's no other number of feet it could have gone forward? You're absolutely certain of the 34 number?
No. Again, if you look, see where it says vehicle speed?
I see it.
So at the start of this event, which is the trigger minus five, so the trigger is actually where it's triggered, and it takes 5 seconds before, 5 seconds after. But when the trigger happens, it's actually stopped. But the 5 seconds before, it's going 13.6 miles an hour forward. So at the start of the data, it's still going 13.6 miles an hour forward, but it's slowing down. You can see you have the brake, where it says brake SW, which is short for switch. The brake switch is a one, which means it's on. So when this event data started, it's going 13 miles an hour.
I'll ask the question a different way. Are you certain that the distance traveled forward during this trigger event was 34 feet? Are you certain?
I'm pretty certain during this trigger event.
Pretty certain or certain?
Well, I've checked the math. I've had people check my math. So I try to be as accurate as possible. I would say I'm certain,
okay.
But I'm an engineer.
Okay.
So there's no absolutes. There's no 100% in my job.
So you're certain of the 34 feet. And is it correct that you're certain of 53 feet going backwards? Are you certain of that, sir?
So backwards from its initial starting position.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. And therefore you are certain of a total of 87 feet traveled that you have at the bottom in that yellow orange. You're certain of that as well?
87 feet of backing, correct.
Okay. Now you also testified on direct, as I understand it, in slide 23, that different numbers represent different gear states of the vehicle, correct?
Correct.
And a zero represents neutral?
I think it's either neutral or park, but I'm pretty sure it's neutral.
A one represents drive?
Correct.
A two represents reverse?
Correct.
Or a two can represent slowing down, is that correct?
Not for a gear shift number.
So you didn't say on direct that two could represent reverse or slowing down?
God, I hope not. It doesn't. So those numbers simply represent, is the transmission in drive? Is it in neutral? Is it in reverse? It doesn't tell you anything about whether it's slowing down or not. But the brake switch and the brake pressure and the longitudinal accelerometer data gives you some information on that.
Okay. So if, Your Honor, we could go to slide 30, please.
Okay.
Mr. Wolt. And I want to do it generally. There's not a need to read any specific number. I just want it clarified.
Mr. Lessie, so is this 30 or 31?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you are correct. It's 31 in the most up-to-date presentation. Thank you. You see all the numbers in blue font on that slide, sir?
I do.
Those are all numbers that you have placed on that slide. Did I have that correct in your direct presentation?
You do.
Okay. So this Excel spreadsheet, there's also numbers in black, correct?
Correct.
So all the ones that are in blue, those are numbers that you have placed into the spreadsheet, correct?
Correct. The one exception is column N, where it says shift position.
Yes.
I changed green to forward and red to reverse.
So the data in the columns in blue are not from the original data that was downloaded from the vehicle, correct?
Like, for example, if you look at column H, I simply did a unit conversion. So it's the same number, it's just in different units. But the black numbers represent exactly as it comes out of the vehicle, but it's the same number.
All right, that's what I wanted to get to. So for clarity for this slide, when you download this data from the vehicle, what is in black, those numbers just come right out, correct?
Correct.
As they're stated. But the blue numbers, they don't come out like the numbers in blue. You have to do something, some calculation, some application to get to the blue, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, we're going to keep that up, Mr. Wolt, please. Thank you. And when we need to get to the specific numbers, we'll be fair and make sure you can see them. Now, in these columns, Do I understand it correctly that you attempted to account for wheel slippage in the revolutions per minute speed values produced by the car?
Not here. You're looking, this is 1162-1. The wheel slippage occurred in 1162-2.
Okay, and so if we go to a slide with 1162-2, we will then go to the slide you believe represents wheel slippage, is that correct?
There are data points in that that represent slippage.
That's my question. In which slide, sir, would you like to pick?
35.
Thank you. So we will go to slide 35. So
I've highlighted the slippage.
Exactly. So you agree that there is data that shows that there is wheel slippage with the Lexus SUV during trigger event. Let's enlarge it for this one here, the trigger event, the number 1162-2, correct?
Correct.
And as I understand it, you testified that this trigger event was caused by a depression of the accelerator pedal at more than 30%. Is that correct?
It's a transition into reverse and then a quick acceleration exceeding 30%.
So let's,
in reverse.
Okay, got it. So the accelerator pedal being depressed to this degree, more than 30%, can be the result of wheel slippage, correct?
It doesn't necessarily work that way. I mean, you can have wheel slippage at any acceleration, technically, depending on the roadway. It's just what is in the data that shows that it's slipping. It isn't necessarily because of the accelerator. Normally, that's what causes slippage. But it's the data. When you look at the data, you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. It's increasing in speed, but yet the longitudinal acceleration is dropping.
My question, again, doctor, is you can have an accelerator pedal.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.